Hello and welcome to the Deep Dive Perspective, a show in which we often tackle issues of great importance, but also controversial, and figures that can often be deemed controversial. Well, today we're going to talk about the end of times, Armageddon, the Dajjal. There are all sorts of aspects to the religious or spiritual perspectives on how the world will end. We live in a time where Israel is at the heart and at the center of many potential wars, and actually is involved in active warfare with most of its neighbors. They have an interesting theory around end of times. It involves a red heifer. Some say it's already been sacrificed. This sacrifice is something that the Christian Zionists, the Jewish supremacists, all adhere to as perhaps the return of the Temple of Solomon in Jerusalem. Of course, at a time when West Asia is alight, and when America and Israel are pushing for war against the Islamic Republic of Iran, this has huge implications. And I've got Sheikh Imran Hussein, an expert on not only Islamic eschatology, but also in geopolitical affairs, and has covered these issues many, many times. But we are honoured to have him with us on Deep Dive Perspective today. Welcome to the show, Sheikh Imran.
Thank you, Sayyid Mohsin. I am not controversial except to the brainwashed masses. For those who think I am not controversial.
Yes, indeed. I think often people who are labelled such are from mainstream establishment. Quite a lot of it I've had on this show is actually just truth. But what it gets kind of deemed as is as being conspiracy theory, or they'll put all sorts of labels to try and put people off listening to what is often a very detailed, well-researched analysis. So I'm afraid that's the category that a lot of the Salafi Takfiri fraternity have put you in. I literally came on him.
I reject that nonsense. I don't have time for nonsense. Can we get on with the interview, please?
Yes. So let's start with your perspective, Sheikh Imran, on Israel and its operations in West Asia. To what extent is what Israel is doing a religious war? And is it motivated by the kind of eschatological predictions about end times that you've thoroughly researched?
The Quran declares of itself that it is absolute truth. And my scholarship is based on the Quran. I am not Shia, I am not Sunni, I'm not sectarian in my beliefs, I'm just a Muslim. And I accept that absolute truth is located only in the Quran. And with that introduction, I can now attempt to answer you. And that is that the story which is now unfolding in the world, in the Holy Land, in Israel, and the State of Israel, began long, long years ago. And it will take some time to explain it. It is the promise of the Lord God to an Israelite people that he would send to them one who would be known as the Messiah. And when the Messiah is sent, he will bring back for them the golden age when Israel, holy Israel, once ruled the world at the time of Solomon, Nabi Sulaiman alayhi salam. But then came the time when Allah sent the Messiah to the Israelite people. And while some of them accepted him, the rest of them rejected him. And when they saw him die on the cross, I never said that he died on the cross. Please be careful. When they saw him die on the cross before their very eyes, they were convinced that he could not have been the Messiah because he's dead. And look at how he died, by crucifixion. And the Torah says that whoever dies like that is the cursed of the Lord God. And so they're waiting for the Messiah to come. When the Messiah comes, this is what he's going to do. He's going to liberate the Holy Land for us, and we'll be able to return to the Holy Land from which we have been expelled. And when we return to the Holy Land, we reclaim it as our own. And then the state of Israel will be restored in the Holy Land, and the Messiah will rule the world from Israel. That is the script. And as a result of this script, they are convinced that now their Messiah is coming. Why? Because they have returned to Jerusalem to reclaim it as their own. Number two, they've restored the state of Israel in the Holy Land. And number three, as every American knows, that Israel now controls the United States of America with someone named Trump ruling from Washington. And as a result, they are in fact already on the way to ruling the world from Jerusalem. And therefore, it should not be long from now before that Messiah comes. But the Quran tells us that Jesus, the son of Mary, was the Messiah. And when they rejected him and they boasted of how they killed him and they crucified him and they were convinced that he was not the Messiah, then Allah Most High created someone who would impersonate the Messiah. The Christian eschatologist says of him that he is the Antichrist. And Christians constitute a very large percentage of believers in the world today. And the Muslim knows him also as the false Messiah. It's the same person. It's not two different people. And so from the perspective of Islamic eschatology and of Christian eschatology, events are now unfolding in the world, which will culminate with the false Messiah ruling from Jerusalem. But in order for him to complete his effort of ruling from Jerusalem, Israel has to replace the United States of America as the ruling state in the world. This is Islamic eschatology based on the Quran. That the false Messiah comes as a shadow. In Taliku ba'da uzu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Intaliku ila zillin zi thalasi shu'ab. Proceed to a shadow comprised of three parts. This is the Quran in Surah Al-Mursalat. When the Quran speaks with a verse which is plain and clear, this is called ayah muhkama. But when the Quran speaks with a verse which must be interpreted in order to be understood, this is called ayah mutashabiha. We have the right to interpret the Quran. No one can stop us. No Mawlana, no Sheikh, no Ayatollah can stop us from interpreting the Quran. But when you can interpret the Quran, please have two peanuts worth of common sense, that only Allah can confirm that an interpretation is correct. So we should not divide ourselves into sectarian movements on the basis of interpretation. That is false, that is nonsense. And so when we say that the shadow comprised of three parts is the false Messiah, the Antichrist, that's our opinion. We can be right, we can be wrong. We should not have boxing clubs over interpretation. I came to the conclusion some 25 years ago when I wrote Jerusalem in the Quran, and no one has interpreted, no one has responded to that book as yet. Maybe they need another 25 years before they'll even read my book. This is the pathetic state of Islamic scholarship today. Makes no difference whether you are Shia or Sunni. This is the pathetic state of Islamic scholarship today, that this important book, Jerusalem in the Quran, published 25 years ago, and they are pathetically silent. They will not respond to it. In that book, I suggested that when the first part of the shadow came, of the Antichrist, the world witnessed within that first part Pax America, sorry, Pax Britannica, that Britain did not fall out of the sky by accident as a ruling state. None at all. There's nothing in political history which can explain the phenomenon of Pax Britannica. If there is, please tell me what it is. Rather, we say this is our Islamic eschatological explanation of Pax Britannica, followed by Pax Americana. And now we are saying, this is our view, that we are now witnessing the beginning of Pax Judaica. They did not listen to me 25 years ago. They laughed at me. They scoffed at me 25 years ago. But they're not doing that anymore. Israel is now flexing her muscles. Israel is now saying, we don't care two peanuts for world public opinion. We will defy the whole world. We will defy the United Nations. We don't care. If the United Nations becomes a humbug to us, we will shut down the United Nations. We are going alone. This is the way a ruling state will behave. And so we are arguing what is happening in Gaza in defying world opinion. What happened when Israel attacked Iran to try to destroy Iran's nuclear plants? All of these are signs that Israel is now flexing her muscles for a Pax Judaica to replace Pax Americana. Trump wants to make America great again. In other words, he's trying to revive Pax Americana. That's why you have American warships now outside of the coast of Venezuela. But Pax Americana cannot be revived. Pax Americana is dependent upon the U.S. dollar, and the U.S. dollar is on its way to the financial cemetery. And so now this is our Islamic eschatological view, with which you can accept, you can reject, that's up to you. But we view the world today as one in which Pax Judaica is now making its appearance, and we are looking forward now to see a future where eventually Israel will be ruling the world from Jerusalem, but that can only take place after the Great War, because Russia and China on the one hand and modern Western civilization on the other are the two heavyweights in the world today. They're hoping for a great war, a nuclear war, which will mutually destroy both of these. And as a consequence, after the great war, the road will then be open for a Pax Judaica.
Well, it's an absolutely extraordinary introduction, very comprehensive, allows us to really go into a lot of the details of what you said. The first one that comes to my mind is the religious conviction of those people who are executing Pax Judaica, that many people saw Israel, of course, as a secular institution, but it is very clearly now undeniably a Jewish supremacist theocracy, perhaps. And so what you're saying is pretty undeniable in terms of the drive at the heart of the Israeli government. It's clear that they want a greater Israel. It's clear that they are expanding day by day. And it's clear that the US is not controlling the policy and the affairs of West Asia. It does seem to be Tel Aviv. Now, is this drive, this religious drive, people like Smotrich and Ben-Gavir, who are, you know, sworn Jewish supremacists, who follow rabbis who also advocate the same philosophy, is it that we're faced with now an Israel which is impossible to control? Because, if they have Unit 8200 and they have all these, these capabilities of accessing the internet through AI and through all the modern cyber tech information they have, is it that Western governments are now totally compromised and are really just forced or willingly operating under Pax Judaica?
I believe that I am not a solitary voice in the world of scholarship, and that there are many, many others around the world, political scientists, scholars of international relations, so on, who are now holding the same views that I am holding, and that is that Israel is defying world opinion, that Israel is flexing her muscles, and that we are moving towards a great war. Even the Pope in Rome holds the view that we are on the doorstep of a great war. And the great war is somehow or the other always connected with Israel. What is strange, what is baffling, what is mysterious, and what is manifestly embarrassing is that my people would like me to be recognized as a political scientist. They will have no problems with my views, so long as I'm expressing my views with nothing to do with the Quran, nothing to do with Islam. Shut your mouth. Don't talk about the Quran. Don't talk about the Hadith. Speak about it as a political scientist. We have no problems with that. But from the time I explain the Quran and I explain the Hadith in a manner different from their views, derived from Hadith, derived from Tafsir, and derived from their different sectarian dogmas, I am persona non grata. They wish I could simply disappear. Most of all, the Salafi. They believe that all of knowledge have already been given by their scholars, the great people who came before. And knowledge is a package which is sealed. All that needs to be done is to transfer that package from one generation to another. There is no need for any new knowledge, any new critical thinking. Imran Hussein is wrong. He's misguided in the manner in which he's explaining the Quran and using the Quran to explain events unfolding in the world, and in particular in the Holy Land. So while I am in good company with the rest of the world, I am in bad company with my own people. That is my predicament.
Well, it's fascinating. I mean, it's undeniable also that this same nexus of Salafi, Takfiri, Wahhabi scholars is actually totally in compliance with Pax Judaica, arguably, because they seem to be more Zionized by the movement than anybody else. I mean, Zionist Christians undoubtedly are supporting and pushing Pax Judaica, essentially, but the Arab rulers and these scholars and these Salafis that you're talking about, during this attack on Gaza and Palestine, they've been the most notable absentees in terms of real condemnation, real challenge to the greater Israel plan. In fact, one could argue that they are complicit and fully backing the greater Israel expansionism.
Yes, unfortunately, sir, you are correct, and that is that many of these scholars who declare themselves to be Salafi, others as well who are not Salafi but part of the Arab world, are being bought hook, line, and sinker and are now clients of Israel. That's right. But the masses of the Arab people have their hearts with Palestine. And it is a dishonest act to lump all the Arabs together and to criticize them and to condemn them as being supporters of the West and supporters of Israel. That is dishonest, and I must condemn it. The large masses of the Arab people if they had the freedom to march to Jerusalem, would be marching with an army, millions strong. That is the truth. So I condemn all these nasty efforts to lump all the Arabs as supporters of NATO and supporters of Israel. But yes, you are right about the governments and about the scholars who have sold themselves and are supporting the governments. You are right. And we commend Iran and we commend Ayatollah Khamenei. They can say what they want. I have the freedom to condemn, to commend who I choose to commend. And Iran must be commended for its defiance of Israel, its capacity to attack Israel with courage, and its uncompromising position of rejection of Israel's claim to be a holy state, and willingness to make alliances with Israel and to recognize Israel and all that nonsense. My problem with Iran is something else. If Iran had not succumbed or submitted to what I understand is a fatwa from Ayatollah Khomeini, rahimahullah, that the development and use of nuclear weapons is haram. I am to the extent that this is a fatwa from him, and Iran remains faithful to that fatwa, Iran is in problem. Because the Quran requires us, orders us, to build power to the extent that we can possibly build power. For what purpose? The function of power is turhibuna bihi aduwallahi wa aduwakum, that your power might function as a deterrent. Pakistan correctly developed nuclear weapons in order to function as a deterrent. Korea correctly developed nuclear weapons in order to function as a deterrent. Pakistan is still alive. Korea is still alive. Without nuclear weapons, Pakistan may have disappeared already. Korea would have disappeared already. The Soviet Union developed nuclear weapons as a deterrent. And as a consequence, the Cold War ensued for so many years. They were not willing to wage nuclear war against the Soviet Union. If Iran had withdrawn from the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and if Iran had developed a nuclear deterrent, Israel could not have attacked Iran. But as it is, not only has Israel attacked Iran with impunity, supported by Trump, but Israel is going to continue attacking Iran again and again until Iran learns that the Quran has asked you to develop power to such an extent that it can function as a deterrent. I wish that Iran will wake up and change that, turn away from that fatwa and develop nuclear weapons. But first of all, you need to withdraw from the nuclear non-proliferation.
Well, the Quran certainly talks about readying your steeds of war. That's a verse that I'm familiar with. So readying the steeds of war at the same level as your opposition seems to be a no-brainer. I kind of have to agree with you. But the Israelis have at least 90 and some say 400 nuclear weapons, most of them probably aimed at the Islamic Republic of Iran. So that's probably another good incentive to say, yes, nuclear weapons are a necessity. But coming back to that sort of leadership in Tel Aviv and their intentions, do you really think that they are ready to unleash nuclear Armageddon? Are they of the mindset and the psychology, having seen what we've seen in Gaza, that they would be ready to to do that? Because the fallout from nuclear weapons, the fallout from perhaps the Straits of Hormuz being shut down, the fallout from Iran bombing all of the, say, U.S. installations across West Asia, an economic meltdown perhaps because of the Hormuz and the Bab al-Mandeb being shut down. Is that something that Israel is unconcerned about, that they would go ahead with this kind of nuclear Armageddon?
Let me remind you, Sayyid Mohsin, that I am not primarily a political scientist. I am primarily someone who is teaching the Quran, and that is what is causing problems. My people do not want me to use the Quran to explain the world today. Imran, stop what you're doing. They will always try to find a way to turn away from the Quran and make it a political discourse. Whether Israel has 400 nuclear weapons or not is not relevant really to me. I am concerned with the Quran, and this is what they don't want me to do.
Sure.
The Quran says, وَعِدُّ لَهُمْ مَا اسْتَطَعْتُمْ مِنْ قُوَّةٍ. Build power to the extent that you can possibly build it. This is Surah Al-Anfal. And the purpose for which power is to be built is تُرْهِبُونَ بِهِ عَدُوَ اللَّهِ وَعَدُوَّكُمْ, that your power will function as a deterrent. And therefore, I have a problem with that fatwa. But that is what Iran does not want me to talk about. I wait for the day when Iran would recognize that they need to build power to the extent that it will deter Israel. Israel is not bothered. Israel will keep on attacking Iran. Israel does not attack Pakistan. Why? Pakistan is a nuclear power. How come they don't attack Pakistan? Why? Because it's not the Islamic Republic of Pakistan. It is the American Republic of Pakistan. The whole world knows that except the chief of staff of the Pakistan Armed Forces. So Iran is not the American Republic of Iran. Iran is sincerely resisting Israel. And that is why they are attacking Iran. And they will continue to attack Iran. Whether or not they will have to bring down the whole world economy, that an attack on Iran could result in the destruction of all the oil installations in the Gulf. An attack on Iran could eventually cause the Straits of Hormuz to be blocked. If that happens, the world economy can collapse. Israel doesn't care, but Iran does care. Iran is acting cautiously, not recklessly. This is why I have so much admiration for Ayatollah Khamenei, that he acts with wisdom and he acts in a manner which is cautious rather than reckless. So I don't think that Iran would so easily block the Straits of Hormuz. I don't think Iran would so easily launch missile attacks on all the oil installations in the Gulf and send them up in smoke. I believe that Iran will act very cautiously, but Iran has to do something to stop Israel attacking Iran constantly. And Trump will also join in the attack on Iran. It's coming again. Look, just wait and you'll see it's coming again.
Well, coming back to your actual area of expertise, as you've hinted several times, I keep taking it to the political, geopolitical, and thank you for answering that question pretty thoroughly. I think that there's this question of eschatology. We understand from your initial introduction that the Jewish fraternity, or certainly this Jewish fraternity, whether it's in the Talmud or the Torah, I'm not sure, they have an eschatological commitment towards creating this end time games where they rule, like, essentially the world from Jerusalem, I guess, or from Tel Aviv. But Islam also has an eschatology, and you've hinted at it several times, and I've not gone into that. But the Dajjal, the rising of the sun in the West, you equate it to perhaps Western civilization and imperialism, etc., from what I gather as well. This is all very fascinating, that the Quranic indications and the Hadith, in terms of their relevance to what's happening now. Do you think we're living in the period now where that Quranic and that Hadith corpus, which talks about the end of times, which talks about Dajjal and the various things that will happen in order for the emergence of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, Imam Mahdi Akhir al-Zaman, according to the Ahl al-Tashayyu, and also according to the Sunnah wal-Jama'ah. Do you think we're in that period now? And what are the signs that you're seeing that might indicate to you that we are?
Our Prophet, Allah's blessings be upon him, has given a timeline of events in the end time, as no political scientist has ever been able to do. These were his words. I'm not quoting the Arabic text, so they're giving an English explanation. When Jerusalem is center stage in the world, and Medina is in forlorn desolation, then the next event that the world can expect in that timeline of events is the Great War. Christian eschatology and Jewish eschatology call it Armageddon. And our prophet referred to the same Armageddon as Malhama, the Great War. And today we see Jerusalem at center stage. You have to be blind not to recognize that. And Medina in forlorn desolation, playing absolutely no role whatsoever in the affairs of the world. And so now we are expecting the Great War. And I am of the opinion, of course, I hope I'm wrong. I'm of the opinion that the Western world, which has been acting in proxy, in fighting Russia in Ukraine, it's actually a war between the West and Russia, not between West and Ukraine. Ukraine is a guinea pig. That war is now winding down. And it is becoming plain and clear that the West is losing the war. I don't think that the war is going to continue until Ukraine has to surrender. And Russia is triumphant in that war and accepts the defeat and surrender of Ukraine. I don't think that's going to happen. But we don't have long again before Ukraine will not be able to fight anymore. I am of the opinion that they will not allow that to happen, that they prefer a nuclear war to save face rather than to face defeat in Ukraine. So we may not have more than a year or two, perhaps, left before something will be done to provoke the Great War. I hope I'm wrong. I'd be happy if I'm wrong, but this is my anticipation. Now, if and when the Great War takes place, our prophet went on to say the next event after that would be the conquest of Constantinople. Why has that name disappeared from our discourse, even in Iran? Mm. Not just any. Nobody uses the term Constantinople anymore. They're scared of using the name Constantinople because it has been made illegal in Turkey. You can't use the name Constantinople. But our prophet used the name Constantinople for the city, and therefore it is a sunnah, and I use the sunnah. I have written a book entitled Constantinople in the Quran. Do you think they will ever respond to my book? The Shia scholars, do you think the Sunni scholars will ever respond to my book? Here it is, Constantinople in the Quran. The first time in history anyone has written on this subject, Constantinople in the Quran. Why would a Muslim army conquer Constantinople? Answer, this is my opinion. I have the right to express my opinion. I am the only one speaking on the subject. Nobody else is speaking about the subject. So allow me to offer my view. I say that the reason why a Muslim army will conquer Constantinople a few years after the Great War, not long after the Great War, is because we have to correct the wrong committed by the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire waged bogus jihad for 600 years, not only against the Shia, but against the Orthodox Christian world. The Ottoman Empire took the greatest cathedral of the Christian world, Hagia Sophia, and shamefully, disgracefully, and manifestly, sinfully converted it to a masjid. And then Erdogan added some salt into the wounds by doing it a second time. So when a Muslim army conquers Constantinople, whether you like it or whether you don't, this is what's going to happen. We're going to return Hagia Sophia to those to whom it rightfully belongs and correct this violation of Allah's law in the Quran. When we return Hagia Sophia to the Orthodox Christian world, that will cement the reconciliation, the friendship and alliance between our people and those who follow Jesus. Number two, after the Great War takes place and the conquest of Constantinople takes place, the Russian Navy will be able to pass through the Bosphorus and enter into the Mediterranean. That's bad news for Israel. Number three, when we conquer Constantinople, the name of the city will be returned to the name of Constantinople because that's the name our prophet used. Number four, when we conquer Constantinople, then all those Christians who were driven out of that land where they lived for thousands of years, driven out by the Ottoman Empire in the Armenian genocide of 1914, I think it was. When we conquer Constantinople, all the Christians, the Greeks, the Armenians, whoever you are, who had been living in that area and who were driven out unjustly, will be allowed to return. When we conquer Constantinople, Muslims and Christians will share the city and we will teach the world how we can live together in fraternity. The prophet then went on to say, after the conquest of Constantinople, the next event that will occur would be when Dajjal will appear in person, the Khuruj of Dajjal. And so, Sayyid Muhsin, we are indeed living in those times at this time.
How fascinating. I think there's probably a whole program that we need to do which actually looks at the eschatology in even more detail. Clearly, we're not going to be able to cover it in this time, but you've given us a great sort of look into the crystal ball, a prophetic crystal ball, no doubt. And your assertions are definitely something that I've read across various hadith, and I think the scholars will affirm those. From the Shia eschatology, I know for a fact there's a strong emphasis on the reign of Dajjal, this force, which is going to be a force of evil, which will basically mesmerize the world with miracles and all sorts. And in his opposition, it's clear that the Christians, those Christians of a genuine belief in monotheism, will unite with Islam, and Al-Mahdi, Ajalallahu Ta'ala Faraju, and also Hazrat Isa alayhi salam will, it said, bring a reign of peace. And you fascinatingly to also talk about Gog and Magog, Yajuj Majuj, which is again outside the scope of perhaps the possibility of going into depth today. But I'm going to say we'd love to invite you back again very soon. Perhaps go into these things in a little more detail. I think today you framed it excellently in terms of making this eschatology relevant to our contemporary period. I think that's pretty clear that you're of the opinion that we're entering that phase now. The Great War is coming, so we got to brace ourselves. Just a final conclusive remark from you, if there's anything that you'd like to put forward, Sheikh Imran, before we conclude.
I would like to share with you that I have found it a very pleasant experience. I was in Qom in Iran, and I had 40 Iranian scholars of eschatology, but they didn't consider themselves eschatology. They call it ilmul mahdawiyya. And these 40 scholars, and I was the only Sunni from the Sunni eschatology, and we had a session lasting about 3 to 4 hours. And there was someone translating from Farsi to English. But it was a pleasant experience. We differed on eschatology, yes, but we were able to talk with each other, and it was a pleasant experience. And we were friends, yes, for 3 to 4 hours. I can't do that with the Sunni. Not at all. If I were to attempt to speak with the Sunnis on the subject of eschatology, they'd probably end up throwing stones at me. So I have to share with you that I felt myself more comfortable in Qom speaking to the Shia as a Sunni than I speak with my own people.
Yes, our brethren of the scholarly circles of a lot of the Orthodox Sunni fraternity don't seem to tolerate a lot. Unfortunately, that's the time we live in. It bears itself out with the takfiri ideologies of ISIS and others, and it's a way that the Pax Judaica has manipulated the Muslim world, divided it, used sectarianism, used these kinds of very literalist Orthodox ideological dogmatic stances, and they actually then castigate scholars like yourself who've genuinely inquired, who've done real research, and actually with the doors of ijtihad according to them are closed, and therefore it's very easy, I guess, to poo-poo any scholar who challenges their orthodoxy. Their orthodoxy doesn't seem to have led us anywhere nice, because you have a powerless Muslim world, as you rightly said, and one which is really a puppet and a slave of Pax America, and now you're saying Pax Judaica, and they seem to be quite willingly, happily going towards enslavement. The Great War, perhaps, will shake them up. One doesn't know, but we value your research, Sheikh Imran, and we'd love you to come back, and perhaps we'll get a Shia scholar and maybe a Sunni scholar to sit down with us. And you've recently, I noted, did it with two of my Jewish friends, my rabbi friends, Rabbi Beck and Rabbi Haim, who you entered into. I haven't seen the full video, but I'd love to understand what their version of the Jewish eschatology is around all this, because they're very anti-Zionist and they're very anti the whole notion of Israel.
Rabbi Beck showed great intellectual courage when he responded to my question, and he declared that the Zionists were Gog and Magog. They constitute a significant part of Gog and Magog. Rabbi Sofer, that's the name I got from him. I don't know the name of Haim. Rabbi Sofer, on the other hand, was holding on to the Torah. And for him, Gog and Magog were two nations. He would not tell the audience who the two nations were. Of course, it's Russia and Iran. But he did not mention the names.
Interesting. That's an interesting one. Maybe I'll bring them onto this show and we can go into more detail on that one as well. But thank you so much for that kind of erudite and very wide-ranging analysis, but also introduction to the eschatology of Islam. We didn't really have time to do full justice to it because there's so much to unearth around this subject, and you're probably one of the only people who absolutely specializes in it. So we thank you for your joining us and giving us your knowledge. And I'm going to say, well, whenever you have time, we're going to do part two on this. To my audience, I got to say basically that, eschatology, religious, from all of the Abrahamic faiths, seems to point to the reality which Sheikh Imran Hussein has indicated. We are in an exceptional time where extraordinary and vile things are being done. And at the heart of it is Tel Aviv, quite clearly. At the heart of it right now is Gaza. But the tremors and the vibrations that are being emitted from that region will affect the rest of the world. All we can say is to avert the great war, which is being predicted and which is prophesied. We need, as a human civilization, to intervene all around the world. I guess we have to stand up to the establishments that don't seem to be batting an eyelid in terms of genociding Palestinians and empowering Pax Judaica to dominate not only West Asia, but indeed to dominate the whole world, because that's what they seem to be doing. Even the British government here, the American government, I don't think any of them can't be denied that they are totally under the control and influence of Tel Aviv and the sayings and the doings of the global Zionist movement. Where it leads, well, you've heard from Sheikh Imran Hussein. I'm afraid I tend to agree with him. You may not. Do let us know. And either way, Deep Dive Perspective does want to go where a lot of other channels don't dare. And we will challenge established narratives on an ongoing basis. And I'd love for you to like, share, subscribe, you know, hit all those buttons so that we can bring more voices like Sheikh Imran Hussein, who are willing to challenge the status quo, to challenge those mainstream media agencies or mainstream establishments, which brainwash us with one version of what reality is. There are many, many versions of reality that we need to explore even more deeply. Thank you again. My gratitude to Sheikh Imran Hussein once again. It wasn't enough time, to be fair, but we'll meet again, inshallah. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
And to the audience, goodbye. Until next deep dive, we look forward to seeing you again then.